Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Andy Murphy. Facing increasing water shortages, states along the Colorado River are working on water management and sharing plans. The federal government has imposed a 2026 deadline for those plans, and there's little agreement among those states and the 30 tribes that also depend on water from the Colorado River and its many tributaries. There's also little official guidance on how tribes can participate. More on getting tribes' input and demands for this much-needed resource right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Federal officials say they do not have many resources to offer if it takes over law enforcement on Northwest Montana's Flathead Reservation. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports those comments come as the county plans to stop providing those services on the reservation.
For decades, Lake County has overseen felony jurisdiction on the Flathead Reservation as part of a long-standing agreement. But commissioners say the county can no longer afford it and wants to pull out. That would pass jurisdiction to the state, but Governor Greg Gianforte says the state is also pulling out of the agreement. That means the federal government would take over, but Montana U.S. Attorney Jesse Laslovich says federal agencies are already stretched.
And we know for a certainty at this point it will be worse in the short term, just from a resource perspective and holding people accountable.
He says his office would only be able to prosecute bigger cases that impact a large number of people, like large drug distribution or sex trafficking. Lower-level felony offenses might go unchecked.
That's an unacceptable consequence.
County Commissioner Gail Decker says it costs about $4 million to provide law enforcement services on the reservation.
If we have to stay in it just for public safety concerns, then we'll have to make decisions about where we can find extra money.
Decker says that could come in the form of budget cuts, staff layoffs, or asking voters to approve a levy. If Lake County continues with its plan to pull out of the agreement, the federal government would take over May 21st. In Columbia Falls, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Canada's Auditor General says the federal government is failing to pledges on housing and policing to the country's Indigenous people. It's a refrain from what was voiced by previous fiscal watchdogs. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
Auditor General Karen Hogan released three reports this week, two of them focusing on housing and policing for First Nations. She says her latest audit shows a distressing and persistent pattern of failure.
I'm rather discouraged that it's been 20 years and there is little progress despite the amount of money that has been invested.
Hogan says previous auditors general have talked about the situation being unacceptable and even beyond unacceptable. She says despite many warnings, the lack of funding for housing means that the number of First Nations homes in need of repair is basically the same as it was in 2015. She says it's obvious that the process has not been working and there is 20 years of information to substantiate that.
I'd like to see a fundamentally different approach taken by the government to address the issues, whether it be around safe drinking water, emergency preparedness, housing, or policing. The approach of being passive and siloed and having communities apply doesn't appear to be working.
Hogan says adequate housing is a basic human need and adds that she's completely discouraged that so many First Nations families continue to live in substandard homes. Hogan's report says Indigenous Services Canada and the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation have made little progress to support First Nations efforts towards better housing conditions in their communities. She also says the data shows that government agencies have not given priority to communities with greatest needs, and those communities with poorest housing conditions got less money than those with better housing conditions. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
More than $30 million for 42 climate projects have been awarded to tribal communities in Alaska under the Bureau of Indian Affairs Tribal Climate Resilience Annual Awards Program. Alaska received about one quarter of the $120 million in awards recently announced. The funds are intended to help address climate change. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by BNSF Railway, proudly supporting the nation's economy by moving the goods that feed, supply, and power communities across the country. More at bnsf.com/tribalrelations.
Support by Sanofsky Chambers Law, championing tribal sovereignty and Native American rights since 1976, from opioids litigation to treaty rights to tribal self-governance, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska. Sanofsky Chambers Law.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Andy Murphy, sitting in for Sean Spruce. Agreements among states and tribes over how to manage future Colorado River water use are getting hammered out right now. The role for tribes in the discussions remains unclear, since the century-old water sharing agreements largely ignored the 30 tribes that have always depended on the resource. In Arizona, the Gila River Indian community has already said it will not accept the state's proposed plan for cutbacks when water levels are low. Meanwhile, four states and a half dozen tribes in the Upper River Basin are close to finalizing a water agreement. The Navajo Nation is finalizing terms of a settlement that promises more authority over water and infrastructure funds. The backdrop for these agreements is a dwindling resource brought on by climate change. You can join our conversation this hour. Are you dependent on water from the Colorado River? Do the discussions remind you of water usage debates where you are? Give us a call at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joining us now from Phoenix, Arizona, is Ethel Branch. She is the Attorney General for the Navajo Nation, and she's Diné. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Ethel.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here with you and all of your listeners.
Joining us from Flagstaff also is Jolynn Ashley. She's the chair of the Navajo Nation Water Rights Commission. She's Hopi and Navajo. Welcome to Native America Calling, Jolynn.
Good morning, and thank you for having me as well.
Thank you both for joining. So, Ethel, I want to start with you. We just mentioned in the intro that Navajo Nation is coming close to finalizing a settlement. What is the water usage settlement the Navajo Nation is closing in on right now, and how long has it been in the works?
Thanks for that question, Andy. So this is a proposed comprehensive settlement for the nation's water rights in Arizona. So it's going to be quite extensive. It's going to include our Upper Basin Colorado River claim, our Lower Basin Colorado River claim, and a big part of that Lower Basin claim is the LCR, the Little Colorado River Subbasin claim. That's actually, the LCR is in an active adjudication right now. What we've seen so far in terms of activity for the tribes is that the special master in that case has issued a proposed proposed decree for the Hopi tribe. And so now we're kind of at the phase where the nation's made its way halfway through our case, and we're preparing to move into the second phase as well. But this is also, surprisingly for some folks, the nation also has a claim in the Gila River Basin with respect to our Big Boquillas Ranch, which is just right next to Havasupai tribe, tribal lands as well. So it's quite extensive, as you can imagine, and this is something that our leaders have been working hard to settle for decades now, almost half a century. The LCR adjudication itself has been active litigation even longer than I've been alive. Almost half a century there as well.
Right, right. And this is the Northeastern Arizona Indian Water Rights Settlement Agreement, right?
Right. And it's going to include the claims for Hopi Tribe as well as San Juan Southern Paiute as well.
Okay. So what would this settlement provide for the Navajo Nation? And what is the legal basis for getting where we are right now?
Well, I think the most important thing that this settlement will bring my people is water security in our Arizona communities. We are largely almost 100% reliant on groundwater as our municipal water supply in Arizona on the Navajo Nation. That is very unique among municipal water suppliers in this country. Most suppliers rely on surface water, and groundwater is seen as sort of an insurance policy. It's there when you need it. And so that's going to give us the opportunity to access surface water, which is huge to me in terms of ensuring that we have water for the future, ensuring that our homeland remains habitable, you know, from time immemorial, forever after, essentially. So very, very important to the ability of my people to remain in our homeland, in the Arizona portion of the nation, and know that not only do we have, will we have significant supply of surface water, but we're also going to have, you know, that really great, high quality, extensive groundwater as well. I don't know if you're familiar with the Coconino Aquifer, but it underlies basically the Four Corners region, about a quarter of the states of Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, and Utah. And so that's a huge resource in the region. And then, of course, there's also the Navajo Aquifer, which is underlying the Black Mesa region. And when we're talking about our Upper Basin claim, that's not currently under an adjudication. And an adjudication, it can take you 50 years from the filing or the initiation of the adjudication to actually see decreed rights, enforceable rights come from the court. So, you know, the Upper Basin is not even under an adjudication at this point. So, you know, without a settlement, we would be looking at least a half century timeline to actually be able to access that water. So that's huge to be able to have that water now. And the Upper Basin water in particular is very, very significant. So under the way the water is divvied up along the Colorado River is Upper Basin gets 7.5 million acre feet a year, Lower Basin gets 7.5. And of course, the water is flowing from the Upper Basin to the Lower Basin. So those Upper Basin communities get served first. And Arizona has a small portion of the state that's in the Upper Basin. Most of that is Navajo Indian Country. So they do have an allocation. What's unique about Arizona's allocation is that it's 50,000 acre feet. It's a fixed number. And the rest of the states, the upper division states, they are getting a percentage of, you know, what's left. And so that 50,000 is seen as very secure because that is pulled off the top. And then the states get, you know, their percentages from the Upper Basin. So what the nation would be getting out of this settlement is 90% of that 50,000 acre feet for Arizona. A small portion, 3,000 acre feet, would go to the city of Page. There would also be a small amount that would serve National Park Service and other federal entities. As part of the settlement, Hopi Tribe would be getting 3,000 acre feet of that, and the nation would be getting the 47,000 acre feet remaining. I think those numbers work out. So that to me, that is huge. That is, you know, some of the firmest water on the river. And given the hydrological conditions that we're facing right now, anybody watching the news about the Colorado River knows that, you know, there are impending shortages and, you know, that a lot of the water that people expected to be there just isn't there today. And that it's so dire that the states are starting to acknowledge that and proposing solutions for changes in use and management of that Colorado River water.
Right. Right. And you just explained the way things are divvied up. We have like the upper river, we have the lower river. When it's divvied up like that, does that make things complicated, especially for Navajo Nation, which is just right in the middle?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, we weren't at the table. We tried very hard to be at the table when all of that divvying up happened. But we've kind of been shoved to the side at every chance. You just read Gorsuch's dissent in the Supreme Court case that came out last year, and you can see that history play out where we've tried to be there and tried to advocate for our rights directly. So it's very problematic. We're just trying to insert ourselves into that process, into that system. And it's a system that doesn't really, it's not designed to protect the rights of Indian tribes. Mm. It's difficult. It's very difficult, especially to try to assert a role and establish a role that is, on par with the states, when really our equal is not the state. Our equal is the United States. That's who our government-to-government relationship is with, and the states are, of course, a subsidiary of that. So, yeah, it's very difficult, but given the hydrologic conditions, that underscores why it is so important that we lock in our rights now and we have those enforceable rights because right now discussions are about writing water off, like reducing that 7.5 number for both the upper basin and the lower basin, in acknowledgement that water just isn't there. And they're talking about, 4 million acre feet per year, which is 26% of the total 15 million acre feet per year. So okay, they're looking at significant reductions. And we don't want, without being there at the table with perfected rights, we don't want some of that 4 million to be the water that should have come to us, right? And we don't want to later be told, well, that water's just not there, so we can't. Mm-hmm. Give you any of it.
Right. We're going to go to a break in just a moment here, but we'll be back with Ethel Branch, Attorney General for the Navajo Nation. We're talking about Colorado River use. It's a complicated topic, but it affects 40 million plus people along the river. You can join us by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. The Exxon Valdez supertanker ran aground and split apart 35 years ago in Alaska's Prince William Sound. The resulting oil spill fouled beaches and killed untold numbers of birds, fish, and wildlife. We'll recount the spill from a Native viewpoint and learn about the lasting effects more than three decades later on the next Native America Calling.
Support by Archaeology Southwest. Did you know almost all major archaeological sites in the Southwest have been looted or vandalized? Looting and vandalism impact Indigenous people, past, present, and future. Every day, countless Native American cultural items are lost or damaged forever through looting and vandalism. Federal and tribal laws protect archaeological resources. More information about ending archaeological resource crime and how to submit a tip at savehistory.org and on social media at savehistory.
You are listening to Native America Calling. I'm Andy Murphy, and we're talking about the Colorado River today. States and tribes are at odds on how to manage and conserve water use after a federal deadline in 2026. Are you among the more than 40 million people who depend on the Colorado River? Are you concerned about access to water in the future? And what is your tribe doing to make sure their water needs are met? We're at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. We have Ethel Branch here with us, Attorney General for the Navajo Nation. Ethel, just before the break, you mentioned the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court ruled against the Navajo Nation last June, saying the 1868 treaty did not extend and water rights. How is that related to what we're talking about today?
Sure. Well, I'm not going to go into all of how it's related to today, because that would be something that I can't do and fulfill my ethics as the nation's attorney general. Mm-hmm. You know, that's part of that's the setting that we're in, the environment. And you said that the Supreme Court ruled against the nation, but in many ways, they actually ruled in our favor. They could have just said that we were completely blocked from the case and that the Supreme Court had original jurisdiction and that this triggered the ongoing jurisdiction under Arizona v. California, but they didn't. And in fact, there were invitations in the opinion that we, you know, try other methods and even try coming back to the court on different bases. So I think that was a sobering outcome for the state. I think they would have liked to have had an outright victory on their own terms if they had presented that in their briefing, but they didn't get it. And so I think it, you know, for all of us, it was like, okay, well, that's what litigation is bearing out for us. We all need to get to the table and find a solution. I think that's really one of the key things that came out for everybody who was part of that litigation. And we all of us are seeing the reality of hydrologic conditions in the Southwest and intensifying climate conditions that are changing the world around us quite rapidly, especially with respect to water. So I would say that that's the role that that case played. So thank you for that question.
Yeah. And, you know, back to the Northeastern Arizona Indian Water Rights Settlement Agreement, what entities have to be lined up to get this settlement finalized? When do we expect the settlement to be finalized?
Imminently. Imminently, as soon as possible. Right now, you know, it's a 200-plus page document, and so we are the key terms have been settled on. That's in our settlement summary that we made public a few weeks ago, and all of the parties reviewed that and agreed that that was information we could make public because it was settled. It's just a matter of fine-tuning the document. And, you know, everybody wants to make sure that the language in that document is airtight and it says exactly what we mean for it to say, and we all agree as to the meaning behind each of those phrases in the document. And so that's what's taking some time. And then additionally, you know, there are 39 parties that are claimants in the LCR adjudication. So it's a large room. There are lots of parties in that room, lots of attorneys, and some clients as well. When you have a multi-party negotiation like this, it becomes extremely complex. There are lots of moving parts. When you adjust one thing in the document, it adjusts something else. Because of the nature of it. It's just taking some time to nail down those fine points and get to a final document. Mm-hmm. We're taking the time. We were trying our darndest to have something final by the 1st of March, because we're also looking at the congressional calendar, and we want to make sure that we have the ability to get our legislation passed to finalize this settlement. So we are mindful that calendar has slipped, but that's just continuing to drive us forward to completion. I think everyone is committed to having a settlement, so we're continuing to move forward. We're meeting, you know, 3 days a week every week for the full day, essentially. People are working over the weekend and the evening, so people are working very, very hard to get this done. I know the end is in sight, I can't wait till we have that final document, and we will make that public as soon as it is final. It'll be drafted in Navajo Nation Council approving legislation, and then once we have that, we're going to hand everything over to Congress and get that engine moving. So, we're so close.
Okay. All right. And already there are a couple of drafts up on the website. And if folks are curious, we have a link to the website for the Navajo Nation Water Rights Commission on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. If you'd like to dig into the many pages and many infographics that are there. I want to turn to Jolynn Ashley. She's the chair of the Navajo Nation Water Rights Commission. The chair and Navajo entities there are holding hearings and listening sessions, comment sessions around the Navajo Nation about this settlement. What are the discussions like among citizens, and why is it important, of course, for everybody to know about the settlement and the complexities?
Thank you for that question, Andy. Again, my name is Jolynn Ashley. I represent the Navajo Nation Water Rights Commission. I'm a commissioner for Western Agency, and this is very critical for all the Western Agency, well, the entire nation as a whole, but as far as looking at the locations geographically, it's very critical for the nation as a whole to get these talks or settlements explained to the public, and that's what our work has been doing. You heard from Madam Attorney General Branch that there are very different, well, every moving pieces that are occurring, and one of the main points and very important aspect is to educate our Navajo people of what is going on out that affects our Navajo people and our future. And the Navajo Nation Water Rights Commission, our purpose and our focus is to protect, secure, and ensure that we have safe drinking water for the entire Navajo Nation and its people and its future generations. One of the aspects that we continue to hear among our people in the rooms, in the chapter houses and the different venues that we've had our meetings across the Navajo Nation. And just to let you know that we are in phase three. Well, we've been calling them phases because we've had different aspects of the education portion for the settlement work. We've been going out with our team. The team's consisted of the Navajo Nation Water Rights Unit attorneys, the Navajo Nation Water Rights Management Branch, technical folks, our own hydrologists, our experts, and also the commission, as we have all the different agencies represented, including Madam AG Branch is also one of the commissioners, including our technical rep, Mr. Jason John. So we've gone out to a total of about 29 communities thus far. A few of them we've gone to twice. We've also been on KTNN and giving the presentation and just explaining what it is that is occurring in the different rooms that Madam AG had expressed along with the different parties. So we've been more transparent, more engaged, hearing not only the young people, but our elders express their concerns, their comments, and just also expressing and conveying our traditional use, our traditional ways as Navajo people, as Diné people, and how we relate ourselves to the earth, the water, how it's just a part of our everyday being as Navajo people. And so that's been very, very valuable, but also just expressing their ways as how they grew up as sheep herders, you know, livestock, agriculture, and that's really important for our future generations to have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of entities across the United States, they look at 40-year plans, 50-year plans. State of New Mexico just did their 50-day or 50-year update for their water use. Navajo Nation, we look at 100 years. And I think one of the things that I'm proud of as far as being out in the field is that we've had our own Navajo people, our Navajo citizens who've gone out, gotten their education, now are coming back, and we're working, and we're doing this work for our people. And I think that that takes, that is a lot as well. So that's where we've been right now. Like I said, the purpose of the commission is to work with our experts, our legal, technical, look at others that can help assist, outside experts to assist, but mainly to convey the information to our community and also get that information back. Okay. And so we've been collecting all the comments, and we'll have it part of the exhibit. As Madam AG indicated, legislation will drop. It'll be posted. And folks can see all our information on the Navajo Nation's Water Rights Commission website.
Okay.
And all you have to do is type in Navajo Nation Water Rights Commission, and it pops up. So we have our latest information, latest and greatest updates on that. So.
Okay. All right. So what water infrastructure changes would this settlement afford? And there's a plan for a pipeline, right? Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Yes, definitely. I think a lot of the Navajo people are seeing a lot of that work currently ongoing right now through the Navajo Nation's Navajo Gallup Water Supply Project, which, you know, there's a line between Gallup and Shiprock. And eventually, and this is something that we've been looking at and working a lot in coordination with NTUA, is the Navajo Nation global mapping. And it'll have a lot of different pipelines, water delivery systems that are being planned, created, and implemented by NTUA and the Navajo Nation. I think one of the big key aspects with regards to Western is that the Navajo Nation's already looked at investing and coordinating a lot of its own finances into different systems to deliver water, safe drinking water. But we are going to be looking at coordinating a lot more future pipelines that will be connecting all our water sources. And the important aspect is we're going to diversify our water source. We're not just going to be solely dependent on groundwater. We'll be looking at surface water intake, and that's going to be key. A lot of folks throughout the United States do that, and I think that the nation is moving in that direction, and that'll be a good thing for all its people.
Okay. All right. I want to take a call. We have Claude in Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening to KUNM. Hey, Claude, go ahead.
Well, my question is, first, I want to say thank you for the hard work and the diligence that you're showing for the indigenous people of the Four Corners area. That's really huge. My question specifically is about the San Juan drainage, and especially coming out of farming and into the San Juan Basin around Shiprock. I'm wondering what, one, Navajo Reservoir, and two, I know that's part of the Colorado Compact, but also the coal mine there, and how is that the water being repurposed there?
Okay. All right. Jolynn, could you answer that question? Jolynn?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
For that area. There's quite a bit of different studies that are occurring through the water management branch. As I am aware, we're looking at, of course, ensuring that we have continued water quality monitoring, especially in the uranium areas of that area. But I I know that there's work on a water treatment plant in the area. So there's a lot of technical expertise that's going into that Four Corners area with regards to the San Juan River Basin, mm-hmm. with reference to, you know, ensuring that we have safe quality drinking water.
Okay. So you mentioned, or Ethel mentioned, Hopi and San Juan Paiute tribes. How does this settlement benefit those two tribes nearby, and why are they part of this Navajo settlement?
Yes. Well, if you look at a map, and we do have those online, you look at the basin area. Everyone within that basin will be affected by this settlement, including the two tribes you mentioned.
Okay.
So what it is we're having discussions through settlement because we share a same resource. And so that is one of the aspects that is key, since we're all in the same area. But I'm sure Madam Attorney General Branch can highlight other aspects that she can if she comes on.
Okay.
Have her come on and she can help answer that as well.
All right. Well, we're actually going to go to a break right now. We'll do that right after. We're talking about the Colorado River and how tribes are making sure they have a secure spot for water allocations and plans coming down the pipe. If you'd like to join in the discussion, there's still time. We're at 1-800-996-2848.
Support by Archaeology Southwest. Did you know almost all major archaeological sites in the Southwest have been looted or vandalized? Looting and vandalism impact Indigenous people, past, present, and future. Every day, countless Native American cultural items are lost or damaged forever through looting and vandalism. Federal and tribal laws protect archaeological resources. More information about ending archaeological resource crime and how to submit a tip at savehistory.org and on social media at savehistory.
You're tuned into Native America Calling. I'm Andy Murphy, and there's still time to join our conversation about water management of the Colorado River. Are you concerned about state plans for water use? What are you doing as an individual or community leader to conserve water? We're at 1-800-996-2848. I want to go to a caller right now. We have Clark in Hopi, Arizona. Go ahead, Clark.
Good morning. How you doing?
Doing good. Go ahead.
Thank you. I had a question for Jolene, and thank you, Jolene, for being on the air. It's been a while since I last spoke with you, but my question is, of course, our homeland's up in Muncupie. What is Hopi actually going to get out of the pipeline that's currently planned from Page into Tuba City, Gray Mountain area? How much of that will Hopi receive? Do you have any information on that?
All right. Jolynn, go ahead.
Thank you, former Vice Chairman, for the question. I appreciate it. The nation and Hopi and other parties are continuing to discuss the different amounts, but we have on our website the proposed settlement, which kind of gives down a breakdown of the various resources that will be inclusive in the development of a pipeline. Ultimately, the nation, Navajo Nation, and the Hopi tribe, including the Southern San Juan Paiute, will be looking at future deliverance of drinking water. In that area, one of our main focuses is to deliver water to areas that are in need. And in that area specifically, not just Muncupie is in need of water due to the hydrology, and but Cameron chapter along that area, you know, has a lot of uranium aspects. And so those water quality issues need to be addressed, including the quantity, the water quality and quantity. Hopefully in the future through the settlement, we'll be delivering safe drinking water to those areas. And up in the Bitter Spring, Cedar Ridge area, where since the Bennett Freeze has affected both tribes, that'll be another key area of focus so that there is deliverance of safe drinking water, which has been restricted due to the Bennett Freeze. Okay. But that information can be found on our website for the proposed settlement. So if you want to take a look at that, Mr. Vice Chairman, you can do that.
All right. Thank you so much, Jolynn. Let's go to another caller. We have Carl Slater in Phoenix, Arizona. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. And I just want to thank both Attorney General Branch and our Commission Chair Ashley for all the work in getting us to the point where we're at, and emphasize that we as tribes are working together, and there's just a tremendous amount of healing and love for our people in planning out the water resources for our future. And we believe that with the settlement, we'll be able to have a strong and prosperous homeland, forever homeland. And I don't have any questions, but I really wanted to make myself available as a leader of the Navajo Nation, an elected council delegate, if there's anything that you or others had, and Attorney General Branch had asked me to call in. So thank you.
Okay. Well, Carl, what are you hearing from citizens in your area about this settlement?
There are proposed water delivery projects that would help serve the outstanding needs in my communities. I represent three communities in particular, Rock Point, Rough Rock, and Round Rock, that have serious water quality issues in terms of quantity and then also quality. We have arsenic, we have dissolved solids issues, and we're trying to rebuild a trading post in Round Rock, and we're trying to do that in Rough Rock as well. We presently can't even do that with the amount of groundwater that we have in the area to meet the needs of our local citizens. So, you know, we have to travel at least a half an hour to go to a grocery store, but to go to a really proper one, you know, it's about 2 hours away. We need to have those resources closer to us for our basic necessities. And that's a tangible example of how this settlement will help bring that water from, you know, different sources, you know, whether it's San Juan River or elsewhere, through different pipelines to help support our future growth and economic prosperity.
Okay. All right. That's Carl Slater, Navajo Nation Council Delegate. He's also on the negotiation team of the Navajo Nation Water Rights Commission. I want to go to our I want to go to Ethel Branch again. She's a Attorney General for the Navajo Nation. Ethel, what remains for Congress to do after this settlement is finalized?
Sure. Once the settlement is finalized among the parties, that really just initiates the process of moving the settlement forward. But first, I just want to say thank you so much to Honorable Delegate Slater for joining. He's just been such an incredible leader on our negotiation team, and you know, we go to leadership for guidance as the negotiations move forward, and he's always just giving such careful, thoughtful consideration and guidance to us. So I just want to say thank you for that. You know, in terms of initiating the process, then of course it will hand things over to Congress, to our delegation. And we will have draft legislation that we present, but we do, of course, expect that to change through the legislative process. And so that process will go underway. There will be hearings probably both on the Senate side and the House side, and then markup, and, you know, things will move forward. And we do expect there to be a lot of activity around this, just because it's, you know, it's such a huge region. It impacts ultimately a number of states. We have some really important provisions in the agreement that will allow us flexibility to be able to serve the nation as a whole in the state of Arizona, such as, you know, the ability to move water across basins. That's not something that we could ever get in an adjudication, which would limit under existing law that the water would be limited for use in the actual basin that it relates to. So that's one really, really important thing for us. And the example I like to give for folks who are familiar with Navajo Nation is that, you know, the settlement allows us to bring water from Lake Powell to Tuba City. It, without the settlement, we would not be able to cross that basin line because Lake Powell is in the upper basin and Tuba City is in the lower basin. That's one of our largest communities, one of our fastest growing communities, and one of our communities that, as Delegate Slater implied, whose growth is really limited by availability of groundwater. So once that community has surface water from the river, that opens the door to wonderful, wonderful growth in the region. But so that's one thing that other states might be interested in. And then another thing is we are negotiating for the ability to divert that water, our Arizona, Colorado River water in New Mexico and Utah, in addition to Arizona, because the nation already has extensive infrastructure. We have a largely built out Navajo Gallup supply project that brings water, that will bring water down as far south as Gallup. And our vision is under our Arizona settlement to continue bringing that water to Fort Defiance, Window Rock, Fort Defiance, St. Michael's, all the way down to Lupton, even to Ganado. Okay. So to have the flexibility, you know, without being able to utilize that New Mexico infrastructure and pull that water from New Mexico waterways that are part of the Colorado River system, that would mean we'd have to build a new pipeline and, you know, bring it from basically Lake Powell into Window Rock. And that just adds this exorbitant expense. And we want to, so we want to have that flexibility of having the diversion that we make on the San Juan River count as an Arizona diversion, because it will serve Arizona communities on the nation. Okay. So that's another thing that other states may be interested in. And so this agreement could evolve in that process. You know, whatever Congress decides is acceptable, not only will it likely impact projects and our ability to move the water as we need to, but it, of course, there's going to be a price tag, and that funding only comes in a settlement. It only comes from Congress through appropriation. Okay. And so that's another thing where, you know, like we have this tremendous list of, for Navajo Nation, 9 projects that are extensive and quite costly. But we are talking about a quarter of Indian lands in this country, right, that will be dealt with in this settlement. We are talking about 3 Indian nations. So this certainly, we believe that this settlement should be treated as something very different from what has been seen in the past.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Thank you for that. I want to go to our last guest here from Salt Lake City, Utah, is Chuck Cullum. He is the executive director of the Upper Colorado River Commission. Welcome, Chuck. And here's a first question for you. Start off with some success that the Colorado River Commission has had so far, and what water use plans appear to be on track?
Well, thank you. And my name is Chuck Cullum. I'm the executive director of the Upper Colorado River Commission, which is an organization of the 4 upper division states of Utah, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico. The commission has embarked on a process with the 6 Native American tribes in the upper basin, and we're on the cusp of signing an agreement between the 4 states and the 6 tribes, the Ute tribe in Utah, the Ute Mountain Ute tribe in southwestern Colorado, and Utah and New Mexico. the Southern Ute Tribe in Colorado, the Navajo Nation, the Jicarilla Apache Nation, and the Shivwitz Band of Paiutes in Utah. The group started a discussion about a year and a half ago when the leaders of the six tribes and the water management representatives of the four states had a very unvarnished, frank conversation about the way in which tribes are tribal voices are rarely included in Colorado River management discussions. The state leaders took that to heart and started a process in cooperation with the tribes, and we're hopefully going to sign an agreement in mid-April that will secure a process for the tribes to engage with the states on Colorado River issues. It's a tremendous journey that the tribes and states have taken to get to this point. A lot of listening, a lot of learning, and a lot of travel. So we're really excited that hopefully we'll have that agreement in place in mid-April.
Okay. So what is the context for these discussions? It sounds like y'all will be meeting like every couple months or so?
Yeah, so we've informally, the group has been meeting about every 2 months, visiting the states host a meeting and the individual tribes host a meeting. We've been to the Navajo hosted a meeting at Antelope. I forget where but it was beautiful and on Lake Powell. You know, we've been to five out of the six reservations and have hosted meetings across the four states every 2 months and virtual meetings in between to talk about the issues that the states and tribes face together on Colorado River issues.
Okay. And the agreement that your commission is working on, how long is it valid, and what might cause the parties to challenge it in the future?
So the agreement is for as long as the tribes and states want to continue this effort. So it doesn't have an expiration date. It does have the option for tribes to opt out if they don't see value in it, that's really the opt-out clause is around if folks don't see value in the discussion. Thus far, I think everyone has generated deeper understanding of the significant challenges the tribal communities have for clean water. Okay. And my goodness, it's 2024. We have to do better.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Unfortunately, that is all the time we have for our discussion today on Native America Calling. There's so much more to talk about when it comes to Colorado River use and conservation in the future, and how tribes and their sovereignty and rights to water factor into all of that. We'll definitely be keeping an eye on that deadline of 2026 and different plans that states and tribes have. I want to say thank you to our guests, Ethel Branch, Navajo Nation Attorney General, Jolynn Ashley, Chair of the Navajo Nation Water Rights Commission, and Chuck Cullum, Executive Director of the Upper Colorado River Commission. Join us tomorrow for a look back at the Exxon Valdez oil spill 35 years ago and what's changed since then. I'm Andy Murphy.
Support for this program provided by the American Indian Higher Education Consortium, the collective spirit and unifying voice of 35 tribal colleges and universities. For over 45 years, AHEC has worked to ensure that tribal sovereignty is recognized and respected, and that tribal colleges and universities are included in this nation's higher education system. Information on a tribal college or university near you at AIHEC.org.
Orik mashat or ibdak mashat. New put at the ibdak, and them supper gugu sidat. A mashaka paichum bohimat, behind cho chuk for that, a mo kudu sidak. Ibdak mumkidak, from some chicken for mira. I'm go warm yoga gugu dab, amjadak for mira, docky. By just much of amjad, a moniga, mama came up on me, a monig healthcare.gov. A moya gugu, the homoko gigi, sicker, like homoko gigi, go cutters, homok jude. Eat up amjad him of Medicare to Medicaid her chipkin.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.